At his last words, a bird flew past on the right, a hawk. Apollo's wind-swift herald, tight in his claws, a struggling dove, and he ripped its feathers out, and they drifted down to earth between the ship and the young prince himself. The prophet called him aside, clear of his men, and grasped his hand, exclaiming, "Look, Telemachus, the will of God just winged that bird on your right. Why, the moment I saw it here before my eyes, I knew it was a sign. No line more kingly than yours in all of Ithaca. Yours will reign for ever." "If only, friend," alert Telemachus answered, "all you say comes true, you'd soon know my affection, know my gifts. Any man you meet would call you blessed." He turned to a trusted friend and said, "Piraeus, son of Clytius, you are the one who's done my bidding more than all other friends who sailed with me to Pylos. Please take this guest of mine to your own house. Treat him kindly, host him with all goodwill till I can come myself." "Of course, Telemachus," Piraeus the gallant spearman offered warmly. "Stay up country just as long as you like. I'll tend the man. He'll never lack a lodging." Piraeus boarded ship and told the crew to embark at once and cast off cables quickly. They swung aboard and sat to the oars in ranks. Telemachus fastened rawhide sandals on his feet and took from the decks his rugged bronze-tipped spear. The men cast off, pushed out, and pulled for town, as Telemachus ordered, King Odysseus's son. The prince strode out briskly, legs speeding him on till he reached the farm, where his great droves of pigs crowded their pens, and the loyal swineherd often slept beside them, always the man to serve his masters well. Book 16. Father and Son. As dawn came into the lodge, the king and loyal swineherd set out breakfast, once they had raked the fire up and got the herdsmen off with droves of pigs. And now, Telemachus. The howling dogs went nuzzling up around him, not a growl as he approached. From inside, Odysseus noticed the pack's quiet welcome, noticed the light tread of footsteps, too, and turned to Eumaeus quickly, winged a word. "Eumaeus, here comes a friend of yours, I'd say. Someone you know, at least. The pack's not barking, must be fawning around him. I can hear his footfall." The words were still on his lips when his own son stood in the doorway there. The swineherd started up, amazed. He dropped the bowls with a clatter. He'd been busy mixing ruddy wine. Straight to the prince he rushed, and kissed his face, and kissed his shining eyes, both hands, as the tears rolled down his cheeks. As a father, brimming with love, welcomes home his darling only son in a warm embrace, what pain he's borne for him and him alone. Home now, in the 10th year from far abroad. So the loyal swineherd hugged the beaming prince. He clung for dear life, covering him with kisses, yes, like one escaped from death. Eumaeus wept and sobbed. His words flew from the heart. "You're home, Telemachus, sweet light of my eyes. I never thought I'd see you again once you'd shipped to Pylos. Quick, dear boy, come in. Let me look at you, look to my heart's content, under my own roof, the rover, home at last." "You rarely visit the farm and men these days, always keeping to town, as if it cheered you to see them then, that infernal crowd of suitors." "Have it your way," thoughtful Telemachus replied. "Dear old man, it's all for you that I've come, to see you for myself and learn the news. Whether mother still holds out in the halls, or some other man has it her at last. And Odysseus's bed, I suppose, is lying empty, blanketed now with filthy cobwebs." "Surely," the foreman of men responded, "she's just waiting down in your halls, poor woman, suffering so, her life, endless hardship, wasting away the nights."